Hi, Matthew. Welcome to episode 100 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD, aka Breakace. Matt and I are PhD sports scientists who work with athletes from all around the world. We also work with different tech companies, and we have worked within the research field during our PhDs, lecturing in the university ecosystem. And so what we want to do here is take all of our knowledge and experience and contacts and networks from the world of sport and exercise science and give it to you in an easy, understandable, and hopefully fun, entertaining, digestible way so that you can apply sports science to your own training and get faster and get fitter more effectively. All right, Matthew. So for episode 100, we're doing gray zone. Now,
like actually training in the gray zone, or
yeah,
we're going to go out and do a gray zone.
Gray zone this podcast. This is how I started my article, Matt. Do you find yourself validating a good session with average pace, average power, or peak heart rate? Do you find that even though you're pushing yourself harder and harder, you don't seem to be getting any fitter? The truth is, you're likely doing more harm than good by training in the gray zone. And so what I associate this, Matt, with is the Strava effect.
Okay.
Slow isn't sexy.
And
no one wants a crap upload.
No way. I uploaded a ride the other day and it had zero medals. I was like, well, why did I even go out?
The Strava effect. All right. So, Matt, we want to delve into the gray zone and try and dispel some of the myths that I see regarding gray zone and how you can effectively train in the gray zone. It's not all bad news.
Well, I mean, it's good news if you like the gray zone, which is probably everyone. But I think there's ways that we can do it to make your training and your time, actually your limited time, more effective. We did talk about this extensively in basically every course that we've created. So in the Training Peaks Introduction to Exercise Science for Endurance Coaches, we talked about this. And I even asked you before we started recording this one, didn't we do this on a podcast? Like, no, it was in every course. And we do like mention the gray zone and tempo and zone three things, which are generally associated with each other. But we haven't actually done a podcast on it.
Yeah. And so what has kind of stemmed this, Matt, is I got a couple of questions through on Instagram. Feel free to hit me up at Dr. Will O'Connor. And so
especially they can ask you about the keto diet.
I enjoy far more. And so this is more because I've been training a lot. Every week I've been testing my lactate, which we'll get into around these tempo zones.
Yeah, cool.
So Sard's asked, like, my easy days, I'm running 140 to 150 heart rate. Like, I've already had a reference of what zone that is for him. And then my tempo, I'm trying to sit under 3 millimolar. That's a good number in terms of lactate, under 172 heart rate, max is 197. And he said, what will my gray zone heart rate be or lactate millimoles? Okay. So first off, I was like, oh, okay, there's a red flag here in understanding. And then second question, what's the difference between marathon pace, steady state and tempo? So again, one of those like, and gray zone, right?
Okay, so that question to me indicates that the person asking it has a pretty good understanding of what's going on, but the terminology seems a little maybe messed up. Because so that's probably what we'll get into. Is that how you take that?
Yeah. So the main one was like, he's asked, "What will my gray zone heart rate be or lactate reading?" And so, there is no like specific gray zone where you just don't train, right? There is no definitive heart rate in which you are not allowed to train. There's no definitive power number or range of power that is associated with negative returns.
So you're saying the gray zone isn't a zone?
It's no.
Is it a state of mind?
This is dispelling the myth, right? This is what I really want to get into here. Because there is, I can't remember what system it is. I think it might be 80-20 training. And they have their own training zone. I'll Google it. But they have gray zone in their training zones. So they're like, don't even train here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they don't even let you train in this zone between like upper zone 2, lower zone 3.
Oh, weird.
It's super confusing. It's super confusing because you're like, well, but then they overlay the zones. Like, well, you are allowed training here in this scenario. You're like, that's where the confusion comes from.
Okay. I don't think it's a no-go. So I'd be surprised if that's what they were saying, but I can see why someone might think that. But I've heard of 80-20 before, and they're really popular. I think they did a few podcasts before.
Yeah, so they're saying that they're calling 90 to 95% of your heart rate, which I'd consider zone 3, they're calling it X.
So, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd have to actually read up on like...
Yeah, you can't call them out just yet. Maybe we should just get them on and have a yak about it, but...
That'd be good, actually, yeah.
Yeah, we should talk about what we think the gray zone is instead. Okay, first off, Will, I was just looking at our most popular episodes. I think it's the second most popular episode is training zone, or maybe fifth most, I don't know, somewhere up there in top five. Training zones, science,
it fluctuates actually, depends on like the time of the season, eh?
Yeah, it does. But that one's up there. And one of the things that we talked about is like, how do you find your zones? There's a zillion ways to do it. So first off, that is oftentimes a point of where we miss the terminology. And the whole point of actually having a zone at all is so we can all get on the same page. So it's a bit of a catch-22 because there are so many training zone systems. So it's impossible to get on the same page.
Just like literally about to, in my drafts folder for publication today is my new training zones for running power.
That's because you have your own zones that you had to go and create, isn't that right?
Yeah. So what I prefaced that article with, like, because I'm like, you know, oh, another bloody training zone system.
Yeah.
Each coach has their means of using training zones as that common language. Like, Matt, you may be one of those athletes who like, tell me what to do. Right. You don't want to know the physiological, biochemical, neuromuscular adaptations. You just want to know, like, Matt, Will, I'm paying you. Tell me what to do. What are my zones? Right. And so I have my own interpretation of the physiological adaptations that I want to induce, like through my training methods. And I have a language that's going to help us do that. And that's training zones. Right. And you, Matt, if you're coaching me, you're going to have your own differentiation between what you're doing. Right. Yeah. And so we need the same language, but we also need a different translation, which is going to be whatever training zone system either you create or you utilize.
Yeah. I just started working with an elite rider out of Australia, and I was looking at her zones and setting basically some of the workouts that I apply generally. And one was actually a tempo ride, zone 3, as I call it. And Training Peak shows you what zone it's in as you hover over the percentage of threshold. And it said something crazy. I was like, what the heck? What's wrong? What's wrong with the calculation? And it turns out it's just because she had been using different zones. I was like, oh, well, can we change this? Otherwise, I'm a bit confused because I don't know what all the other ones are. I use Andy Coggins' 5 or 6 zones, generally. Yeah. Power. I actually barely look at heart rate zones to be honest. So maybe you can, well, we have that episode where you said the five reasons to not train with heart rate, right? So
well, yeah, I've got that article on my site as well. But if we, yeah, so in terms of the gray zone, right, Matt, where the first myth is the interchangeable, trying to use it synonymously with zone three. Okay. And so the only way that I see this being zone three being the gray zone is when it is used inappropriately. And that is, that's your, you've got your workout, your aerobic, your easy, whatever you want to call it, your general, your steady, and you want to be in zone two. Now you want to be in that 65-70% VO2 max range that's going to elicit like a really large aerobic stimulus, but it's not going to accumulate lactate. There's going to be no anaerobic metabolism contribution. And the through like studies and decades of laboratory tests, we know that that's kind of like the best return on investment for aerobic training. Right. And then it's when you do that at zone three.
Yeah.
So you're so if I think about like a classic client base personality type, Steve, right? So my Steves in my world, when we're talking about running, 3 to 3.5 hour marathon runners, right? And their easy runs are probably going to be, they should be well over 5 minute Ks, probably 5:30 to 6 minute Ks. Sorry, I can't convert that to miles just yet. But what I end up seeing is 5 minute Ks or less, which is pretty much marathon race pace. And marathon race pace just happens to coincide perfectly with zone three. Right. And so the difficulty here then becomes that when you're really fit and you can run a 3 hour to 3.5 hour marathon, you can run for an hour in zone three without it feeling too demanding.
Yeah.
Right. And so why wouldn't you? Because that looks a lot better.
It feels better too. It feels like you're actually doing something. I got to say, man, so since you put me on that running training plan, I've been doing, you know, my long runs about, I think I got up to 8Ks by now, right? So
yep.
we're getting there. We're building. And it just honestly, the level of runner that I am, it just feels like, honestly, a waste of time when I'm out there plodding away in zone two running. I just feel like someone's looking at me and I'm literally going backwards.
Yep.
It's that kind of a pace.
Yeah.
I feel like I am, you know, I pass someone walking and it takes me a bit to get around them. You know, that to me, that's barely running.
Yes.
But that's zone two. And the idea
that's
of zone two
for you now.
Yeah, that's zone two for me now. It is. And which I can't wait until it's much faster. But maybe once I put my new Alpha Flies on, which I haven't tried yet.
You have Vapor Flies, man.
Oh, those cheater shoes, once I try them. But anyway, the point is that these zones, generally, they are designed such that you can anticipate the amount of lactate that accumulates, right? Because lactate threshold is a real good indicator of, well, fitness. And if you are always generating a lot of that, you might not be able to do a lot of the things that you would want to do in zone two, which are like build capillaries and work at a, I'm fumbling this here with the zone two, but zone two, you're oxidizing fat at the highest rate possible, which is nice.
Yes, important. That's typically that 65% range of VO2 max, which we know like is a laboratory measure. And yeah, what you're describing, Matt, like where you'd really like to be running is that running pace.
Yeah, like a real run.
Yeah, yeah. And what happens and why people are drawn into that zone three, or that, you know, steady kind of feel, is that, yeah, it feels like running, right? Because you can run faster and you're kind of actively slowing yourself down in zone two. But it happens because of your lack of underlying aerobic fitness and conditioning to be able to run zone two fast. So for me and the athletes I've had on board who have gone through my training base for running, now get to the point where zone two becomes pretty hard. If you want to go work at this top of zone two, you're really working because you are that fit. So what happens when Matt says, you know, mitochondrial biogenesis, capillary density, is that the muscle fibers you have just get jam packed with mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell. And so now you're essentially, you know, you had one petrol engine in every muscle cell. Now you have like 10 diesel engines.
Yes.
In every cell, even maybe EVs these days, or hybrids. Right. you want hybrids actually, because you want the type 2X. So you can use some glycogen, some petrol, but mainly you're using electricity.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay, can I tell you what a Steve does on the bike?
Yeah.
They're basically, so a Steve gets into the gray zone on every climb, right? So Steve says, I'm going out for an easy ride with the boys and the girls, the crew. And Steve gets out there and they leave the parking lot.
Can I also just say, Steve is going to say, I'm going for an easy ride with the boys, even if it's 100% girls. It's just Steve lingo, you know?
Yeah, that's how Steve's talk. Yeah.
It's just that they're so PC, they don't even associate any gender. It's just boys or lads.
Okay, so what Steve's do when they get out there is they leave the car park and you start out generally pretty easy because it's an easy ride and you're going out for like 4 hours and you're going to do all your favorite trails.
Possibly a bit dusty as well from Friday night drinks.
Definitely a little bit. But then about halfway up the first climb, you find yourself racing everyone. And you know that this is happening. And you know that everyone's racing each other because you all stop talking.
No, so suddenly you're not racing. You're just proving yourself.
Yes.
Because like racing, you know when you're racing. Proving yourself, you're just flexing your muscles, you know, like I'm not going to be the last one. Why don't you just talk me through your mindset of why you rode too hard the other day with the boys?
Okay. Well, this happened to me. I got stuck in a Steve and I looked at the TSS of that ride and I think it was only like 3 or 4 hours. And the TSS was much more than the race the week after, which was 6 hours.
Training stress.
Quite hard. Yeah. Yeah. So we just did exactly that. Like the first climb is pretty easy. Halfway up the first climb, everyone stopped talking because we're all going hard thinking this is a bit too hard. And we couldn't talk anymore because we're going a bit hard. Right. So we know that we're generating a lot of lactate.
Yeah. You've overcome respiratory compensation point.
Yep. So talking is just feels a bit silly and no one's doing it anymore. You think you're the only one hurting and this is the main problem, but everyone's in the same boat. So you're like, oh, I don't want to be the only one saying that this is a bit too hard. So we did that basically on every climb. By the end, we actually did slow down because everyone was getting a bit tired. And I was obviously watching my power the whole time and I could tell that we slowed down. And everyone was still kind of suffering. Luckily, that's when the endurance kicked in and I felt pretty good. But that's gray zone ride to me, because an easy ride is easy on every climb. And you're accomplishing different things when you're riding in the gray zone than when you are riding, doing an easy ride.
Well, yeah. And then you also finish that ride or that climb or like that run, that session, like, we were going pretty hard up that climb 8. Like, yeah, I was hoping you were going to slow down, but you didn't. Like, oh, I was hoping you were going to slow down, but you didn't.
Yeah.
And after, like, you don't bring it up till afterwards. And like, well, we should have both slowed down.
You and I did that on a group ride. You were half wheeling me, and then I started to half wheel you, and we finished, and we're like, I was like, man, you were going hard. Like, no, you were going hard.
Yeah.
Like, so that's gray zone for me. But here's the thing. If you do a ride like that, that's not bad. That's not bad. The only thing you need to take into account that is not an easy ride. Right? So if you say tackle a climb in zone 3, which we know that you're burning carbohydrates at a pretty high rate, burning a little bit of fat too, which, you know, carbohydrate, that's key. We need to be able to burn carbohydrates. We need to be really, really good at doing that for an extended period of time, because that's what we have to do in pretty much every event.
Totally. And we need to be able to shuttle that lactate out of the cell, buffer it in the bloodstream with the bicarbonate pool. MCT, monocarboxylate transporters, are the transporters used to move lactate. So, like, you know, if you have some lactate at a high concentration, you're going to induce a stimulus to produce more transporters.
Yeah. That's, and the beautiful thing positive about zone 3 is that you're creating lactate, but then you're also clearing the lactate as well.
Right? Yeah.
So you're not feeling that accumulation of the acidity in your leg. So it doesn't actually hurt. You're not going way too hard where the acidity is so high that you're not going to have mitochondrial biogenesis, but you are improving your ability to buffer lactate and also create mitochondria.
Yeah. So when we move into that acidity feeling range, that's when you're going, that's that zone 4/zone 5. That's where you're like, you know, you're working. There's no way around not knowing that you're working.
Yeah.
And so that zone, what I see, we'll get into how that becomes gray zone as well later. But so for staying on the topic of what you're saying, yeah, doing those client, like that's that zone, that level of intensity, zone 3, tempo, first point of lactate threshold, lactate threshold 1, which is the first point of
stop it with the terminology. Oh.
Well, it's where lactate first increases from baseline.
Yeah.
So from baseline, like zone 1 and zone 2, and even at rest, just like cruising around, all your lactate will probably drift between 1 and 2. Like, you could even find in zone 2 you have a lower lactate than zone 1. Just there's a higher respiration, like cardiovascular, like stroke volume. There's probably a greater capacity to utilize and transport the lactate and buffer it. And so that's just like, you don't even really consider it. And then you get to the point where it increases beyond like 1 or 2. So that's where you're getting up to 2 or 3 millimolar, if anyone's, you know, has associated that with their own lactate readings. And so it's at that point that you clearly have an increase in anaerobic metabolism. Like, you definitely do, but not at such a rate that lactate is accumulating. It's just increased. You just clearly have an increase rate, still steady state. And that steady state is ultimately important, maximally important in shifting your overall threshold to a higher level. So that is your ability to, whatever your power output is, you're going to be able to do it for longer and you're going to be able to do more. But it is taxing, requires a larger muscle mass. So induces a larger damage, more neurological strain. And when you do it day after day, you end up, from what I've seen, slowing down. So now your actual muscular force you're producing at zone 3 becomes equivalent to what you were or should be producing in zone 2. And your zone 2 becomes Matt's really slow walkie jog. And you go, I don't want to do this anymore. And you're even more in zone 3. You reach your plateau. You start getting injury risk. You start getting tired. Things start to become more challenging. and then you try and step into like interval training, and then they're crappy.
Yeah.
And they don't become zone four. Like, you're doing them in zone four outputs, but they should be zone five, zone six. And now you have no polarization in your training. You exist in zone three and bottom of zone four in this really small window that does absolutely nothing for you.
Yes. We I think he summed it up pretty good there. It's I think a lot of people can probably identify with that, like what you just said. And I've even found myself doing that. It was this idea that where I had like zone creep, right? As you start to get fitter and feel better, you start maybe consciously or subconsciously pushing up the power of your zones. So like, I'm going out for an easy ride. You start, suddenly it's 10 or 15 watts higher than it was a few months ago because you feel like you're getting more fit. And then you find yourself in that trap, that downward Steve cycle of gray zone, which kind of indicates to me that gray zone is not a zone. It's a state of being. It's more.
You know, do you know how I get into the gray zone, Matt? As so I do my dedicated phase of training, generally like after a big event or something that doesn't really have a focus. Like, it is just, I just keep an eye on my heart rate. Otherwise I'm just like running easy. Like, I'm getting my feet back. I'll do like a HIIT session, like a 30 by 30, like 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, something a bit fun, a bit fast, but nothing where I'm like, I'm trying to do 1K at this speed or anything like that. And then after, you know, a few weeks of that, I'm real fit. I'm back. And now I have some like targets, right? And I'll head out for my 1 hour run. And then I notice like I've been going pretty well for 20, 30 minutes, right? And so it's the last thing I want to do is go less well or start going slower, despite the fact that it's, you know, maybe pretty hot and I'm quite tired and I have a big session tomorrow. So I just hold it at that upper zone two, right? Because I've been so fit, it's just, you know, it's been real low, like upper zone one, zone two, and then it, somehow it's just the fatigue's kicked in a little bit, I've worked a couple hills and now I'm up, right? I'm up near the top, but I'm thinking it's all good, right? It's all good. I still would like to see this upload on Strava as not, you know, as whatever the number is, or, and just in my head, I want to be able to maintain this. And then, so then I do that and I stay pretty much just on the cusp of that upper zone. Right. And then what happens is I'm now in proper training. So I get into my other set, my other like key session, and I'm now just carrying too much fatigue into that session. Then I try to do my, you know, so then I have the session on the Saturday, Sunday, I'm back out for 30, 45 minutes. And again, I'm going, well, this is my zone two level, right? This is it. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, there's a range and it can be lower. And before I know it, this happens to me all the time, 2 weeks in and I'm bloody too tired, way too tired. But I'm still chasing that where I was when I wasn't even concentrating on my training, when I wasn't doing intervals pretty much, right? So I was negating neglecting the demand of the interval training. And so then I bring it back and I try and then I'm not as fresh for all those zone two runs. And so I'm running them slower than I was when I wasn't even quote unquote training. And now that I'm training with intervals, my zone twos are becoming slower because I've got more fatigue clearly from the interval sets that I've been doing. And that's the cycle, that's the state of mind for me that leads me to issues. Because on paper, I'm in zone two still. Like, I might be right at the top, but I'm not inappropriately training, I'm inappropriately recovering. Which is possibly inappropriate.
So do you think, Will, that there's an issue with staying, like riding or exercising consistently at the upper end of zone two? Do you think that's a problem?
That's the state of mind thing. Because sometimes I just find myself there and I'm like, I barely even feel like I'm exercising. You know, I just, my legs are free. I'm super bounced. You know the feeling.
Oh, yeah.
You're just, Superman. It's your day.
Yeah.
It's your day. And then there's the time where you're like, it's not today. Today's not my day. Like, I'm motivated. I'm a bit tired. I had a big set. I was running around after, you know, we got a trampoline. It's bouncing for half an hour doing ring of rosies with my son. And I'm not on today. So that, when you chase the upper end, is when you start to get into trouble.
Yeah, that's tricky because it's a zone. And I think you're right. By always trying to stay at the upper end of the zone, obviously it's really hard to stay really steady. So you end up bouncing your intensity higher into zone three. And I think that's really where the issue is. Obviously, it's more taxing to do an aerobic exercise at the upper end of the aerobic zone, up at the upper end of zone two, let's say. But that's not always bad. Generally,
see, so I should probably elaborate now, because I answered this question in my training group, the Faster with Data training group. Each week we do a live stream. People ask me questions. Gray Zone was one of the topics a couple of weeks ago. And I got this exact question. I'm always like one beat under or 2 to 3 beats over. And actually what I concentrated on was, if you're always doing that, it's your inability to do the other sessions more better. Like
more gooder.
Yeah, that's a gooder. To carry less fatigue into those things. So you got kind of two issues there. One is maybe your zones are set incorrectly. Right. And so, that's quite possible. I've seen that. I've 100% seen that, where athletes have come to me, or me personally, I've set their zones wrong. And they're like, this is way too easy. Are you sure? So we do another test. Yep. Need to put them up. Right. And secondly, it's that you run the risk of not doing the other stuff really well, because you are just carrying. Like, why are you there? Are you 1 to 2 beats under or over every single time?
Yeah. I have some athletes who always want to be at the top of that zone. And generally when I'm prescribing a zone, I'm thinking middle, right? They're thinking upper, right? Which is tricky, because then it starts to get higher. And like you said, it's more taxing, more fatiguing. So one of the things that I've started to do is to separate out zone two rides for different athletes, where we'll have easy endurance, which is bang on the middle of the zone. And then I actually can't remember what I called it, but upper end endurance, which is higher end of zone two, still not zone three. No way, not zone three. It's still endurance, but upper zone two. In a way, you're kind of doing the same thing, but if you prescribe them in a particular way, what you can do is ensure recovery from the really hard sessions, but also get maximal aerobic gains at specific times while also adding fatigue. So it's a nice way to kind of manipulate the fatigue and freshness.
Yeah, what you've just said is that's that external objective look at things that you can offer as a coach, because like when you're, you know, another nuance of the zone system is, Matt, you're not well trained at running. So your whole muscular conditioning, what we talked about a couple episodes ago, is not there yet. So even though you're just going to find yourself at the top of the zone pretty quickly, like especially if we're looking at heart rate, you just, after like 20 minutes, you're starting to fatigue. So like the cardiovascular demand starts to really increase. The demand for oxygen is quite high. And someone who has been gray zone training, like just doing that semi-hard training for so long with a poor aerobic system, is going to find training in zone two really hard because it doesn't really exist. They just, they need that upper limit to slow themselves down. And by being under that limit is really, it's going to be super beneficial for them. But because of their underlying poor aerobic base, they're actually going to find themselves up there pretty quick. So in that case, I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, you've come off of just training way too hard. Anything that's slowing you down is being beneficial. Then what I see is when I have athletes, especially ones I've worked with for at least 12 months, they're so aerobically fit, especially the ultra marathoners, that if they're training up a zone two, I need to give them zone one stuff because they are actually running. They're still running pretty steady at zone one. Their aerobic fitness is so huge that their muscles are so jam-packed with capillaries and mitochondria. Their supply of oxygen and fat is just huge that they can actually recover zone one. So I actually need to slow them down. Like, I need to say, oh, zone two, after you've just done a 2 hour, you know, 2x10K marathon pace or half marathon session, it needs to be zone one. Whereas you try and give someone like yourself a zone one, you are literally going to be walking. Like, or you'd be in that, what is it? Is it like 8-9 Ks now? I think is a transitional period of between run and walk. Right. And you're like, what are you getting out of this? You're not getting any specificity of building your run.
Right.
So that's, yeah, I don't know if that was.
Matt bashing hour, isn't it?
you're staring at me in the face, so you're the example.
I'm a Steve when it comes to running. It's crazy. Hey, one of the things that I notice, especially in cycling with gray zone trainers, gray zone state of mind people or state of being people, is that they need to eat a lot. It's because they're so they can go pretty hard, but they're so inefficient at using fuel that they constantly, and they are incredibly reliant on carbohydrates, even at an easy pace, that they need to be fed. They need to be fueled. Otherwise, they can't make it. They're so inefficient at burning fat. And even though when we're competing, we don't need to oxidize fat at a really high level, it's indicative of underlying aerobic fitness. It depends. I'm not talking on an ultra endurance event where, yeah, you probably do, but actually you're burning carbohydrates there anyway. But that is one of the things that I find with gray zone trainers is that they need to be eating. Otherwise they're going to bonk.
Yeah. Because what happens like within the muscle cell is you go, you know, you're at 200 watts. And you're like, well, I want to go to 250 watts rather than waiting a month for you to build the enzymatic processes. So like taking your fat and then producing it into ATP, that requires all these enzymes. So like a constant continuous stimulus of that is going to upregulate the production of all of those enzymes. It's no different than if you start punching bicep curls, you'll get bigger biceps. It's just, that's how it's going to work. But if you immediately just go, well, I want 200 watts and I want to be at 250 and you just go to 250, you don't have the underlying fitness to that. So you're like, don't worry about the fat. Like I'll just use glycogen. I'll just use carbohydrate. And so then that stimulus and stress specifically to upregulate the amount of fat you can use, it doesn't get stimulated because you just go, yeah, well, don't worry about it. I'll just use, like, don't worry about the battery, or just use the petrol in my hybrid, right? Like, I'm just going to punch it. If anyone's got a hybrid, they'll know exactly the analogy. Like, if you punch it off the line, off the red light, like, you're not going to be using the battery. Like, you got to put out some petrol. Actually, I don't know. I don't have a hybrid. I think I just watch them in the taxis. You can see them, you know, in the Yaris.
As another person who also doesn't have a hybrid, it totally makes sense to me. I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I know because someone's going to buy a hybrid, but they live in a mainly 80 kilometer an hour, like 50 miles an hour area.
Is that the gray zone?
That's the gray zone.
Wow. Okay.
So it couldn't, it was too high a rate to use the battery. So they had to majority use petrol. So they didn't really actually save much petrol by buying a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And then when you go at 100 Ks an hour, like, yeah, all right, I don't have a full EV. Like, I know I'm expecting the battery to be able to do like 60 miles an hour.
Speed limit's not a target, Will. Zones are.
All right. Well, yes. So then, Matt, another term, like where I would consider the gray zone is how I was saying, like you don't have the underlying aerobic fitness. So you're always training semi-hard. So then when you go to do intervals, they don't become hard either.
Too tired.
There's too much systemic stress. Whereas neuromuscular, whereas biochemical, cardiovascular, there's just fatigue oozing your system and you go, okay, well, I want these intervals. You do two of them, you're like, oh my God, I'm so, you know.
Dude, you're describing me again with my running. It's crazy. It's like you're in my head.
And you know what I used to do, Matt? So I was training in the gray zone. Because I was mainly training with people faster than me.
Yep.
Right? So I was just trying to keep up. And then I go to do these intervals and I just like, oh man. So that'd be like threshold intervals. So you should finish classic one, you know, like 5 by 5 minutes, 4 by 5 minutes, 4 by 1K for runners. And you do that and you want to finish that like, that was pretty hard. Not too bad though. And I'd just be reaming myself to hit the targets. And then I wouldn't finish the session. And I'd be like, yeah, that's definitely what I can do for 5K. And yeah, so in the end, I'd like have to keep pushing the session off or it would end up kind of bad. And then I'd just lie to myself that was still definitely what I could do for. That was still my ability level. So one of the things, actually, you know, those reminders come up on Facebook. I outlined how that kind of worked. And what I'd neglect and ignore was like pure performance indicators. Right? Like, why don't you go out and do, Matt, like a park run, you know, like a 5K time trial. Why don't you do a hill climb that you have locally? Why don't you go do a time trial on it? Because no doubt it'll be worse. And you're going to blame it on 100 different things, except the fact that you're tired and you need a rest and you've been training inappropriately because you should be within like 5%, definitely, if not 2%, even if you're a bit tired. Because if you're training, you should be getting fitter. If you're a bit tired, yeah, you'll be down a little bit, but it shouldn't be something where you can't even complete it or you're way off. And so that's where I see like your, like the secondary gray zone where you're not doing any of your intervals properly or you're doing these threshold ones, which I said, you know, is like that semi-hard kind of thing. And you start trying to thrash yourself in those. Do you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I guess I have one question though, because we see this a lot and this is obviously a lot of people have put their hands up as you're talking about this saying, hey, this is me. I've done this Steve bit too many times. And you're probably thinking to yourself, well, but I want to ride with my friends and that's how we ride. And I'm not going to let them go because that's lame. And I'm not going to do a hard interval session with them because that's also kind of weird. I just want to ride with them. So you find yourself doing this kind of a zone three ride or this gray zone ride. What do we do then? If we do find ourselves in that situation, how can we change our training or the following days on the fly? And how can we build that kind of thing into a training program?
Great question, Matt, because I've been asking a few people some market research for a product I'm producing, one of our new courses. So what's the big confounding factor for you, like not getting a coach or grabbing a training plan? Exactly what you just said. I don't want to not be allowed to go hard with the boys. right? Because no one wants to be that person. Oh, my heart rate's a bit high. I'll just, Matt said I can't go over 200 watts, so I'll catch you guys at the top. All right, loser. That sounds amazing. Can't wait.
See you never.
Yeah. Can't wait for you to thrash me. Not. Did Matt also tell you not to pedal on the downhills?
Yes.
Ride big rotors. Man, that guy doesn't know anything. So you like, it's going to happen. You have to do it. I do it. Everyone does it. Like, against your better judgment, you just don't want to be that person. You got to understand the stress of it and then just adjust your training accordingly. And so if that had become your interval set, especially for you, Matt, you know, it's that 4-hour ride with essentially upper zone three efforts on the climbs. That's a great session.
Yeah, not bad, eh?
Because you get to the top and everyone's gassed. So they pull out a muesli bar, have a bit of a chat, talk about, you know, who's going to lead this one out and how tired they are from, you know, the last massive downhill they did. So you should go first, or that their suspension isn't set right. So you get a good break. Like, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And then you go down the hill and you do it again. So that's a great, it's no argument that it's still training and it's still really beneficial. Is when you try and carry that through as though it's a easy ride. And same with the run, right? I want to head out with some of the guys. We end up running the back half of a 2-hour run. Like, someone sped up. No one knows who. Everyone knows it wasn't them. And now we're finishing hard, right? So you got to go, that was hard. I either need tomorrow off. Tomorrow needs to be shorter. Whatever I had planned, it needs to be reduced. Like, I have to be able to recover from this effort. And what's the kind of priority system in my training? Because I typically, at the moment, Matt, I have like 3 priority sessions within my training. And I have actually personally for myself stopped planning the other sessions. So I feel comfortable going, I'm too tired. And there's nothing planned there. So I'm actually just going to, that's fine to take it off. Like, I did run too hard with the guys. So I'm actually just, that's fine to take tomorrow off so I can hit my interval set or the cross country of the weekend, like, all good. Yeah. Because it's not wasted training if you use it effectively.
Definitely. I think that's a good takeaway for a gray zone. It's not wasted. You just need to plan accordingly. Generally, my recommendation is the next day is easy, definitely easy in zone 2. And then if there was a hard day very close to that, well, you consider that the hard day because it was. And you need to consider that in the long-term planning of your training.
And that's where it doesn't become gray zone.
Yeah, it just becomes training, right?
Like, the gray zone is what, like, the main takeaway and the misperception is it's inappropriately executed training is gray. So that's where your threshold intervals you're doing at VO2 max are gray. The like 1 minute efforts you do at a sprint for the first one, and then a jog or like barely pedal for the last 4 is gray. Like, that's inappropriate. When you're trying to do a 2-hour tempo and you're just going, you know, zone 4 up, you're just thrashing yourself, that's gray. Like, when you've got an easy run or ride and you're cruising at an output that's, you know, is like one of your long races worth, that's gray. Like, and when something's supposed to be like super easy or recovery and you feel like it's not a recovery, that's gray.
Yeah, you get a Strava medal. That's gray. Yeah, that's great. Well, I think that's a great way to sum it up.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I think people will find that helpful. And if you find yourself as a Steve, we're here to help.
I think the best place to start, well, along with our blogs, is grab one of our training plans, like just one of the shorter ones, I think, because we introduce you how to set your zones, like I've got the tests in there, then the prescription pushes through to your head unit or your watch. So it actually yells at you, like it's beep, 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 like when you go too hard. And then from there, you can jump into one of our courses or engage with us for like some coaching to check over your training and stuff. But otherwise, like now at episode 100, Matt, we have
a lot of episodes.
We have everything you need to be able to train yourself appropriately. And if you want to know where to find it, hit us up on social at MTB_PhD or at Dr. Will O'Connor. Till next time.
Cool. See ya.
Here's to the next 100.